on to our next agenda item. Let's close item number five. We'll move on to item number six, the Bilderain residents.
Yes, Commissioners, Melissa Jones from the Office of Historic Resources for the record. Item number six is the proposed historic culture monument for the Bilderain residents located at 124 East Avenue 33. The staff recommendation is that the commission recommend that this become a designated historic culture monument with findings that the Bilderain resident exemplifies significant contributions to the broad cultural, economic, or social history of the nation, state, city, or community as a reflection of the early 20th century trend that romanticized the Spanish period of early California history, and that the Bilderain residence embodies the distinctive characteristics of a style, type, period, or method of construction as a rare example of a single family residence designed in the Mission Revival architectural style. And Charlie Fisher, the preparer, is here, as well as Didier Delizer, the owners, are here to recap the nomination for you. And as well, I'm guessing they're going to address the addendum that was included in your packet to address the commission's previous request for additional information on related to potential significance under criterion one. And an additional information on the property that can be addressed in the presentation. Thank you.
Charlie, how much time do you need?
We'll probably need about 5 minutes. I don't think they're talking a lot.
Okay, we'll give you 15 because.
Yeah, she needs 2 minutes. So I don't think I was just going to basically recap very quickly.
You got 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. I don't think we'll need 10 minutes. Anyway, basically recap the nomination very quickly. The house built 1912. And one thing we did not have in the original nomination that we did not know at the time that it was actually designed in idea of Casa Verdugo in Glendale. So there's much of a similarity between the two designs. It had some early history that's similar too, because this house was used. The family lived in it, Bilderain, but they also had a restaurant and catering business that they ran out of the house. So there was a background there. And then of course, the later history of the house was owned by a Chinese family for many years. And then it was later a Buddhist temple. So it's about 1987 up until about 19.
Pardon the interjection. Charlie, can you turn the mic just a little bit more? Oh, perfect. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry about
I thought
that.
The last one was so loud on the mic. I was trying to avoid that. Okay. So as I mentioned before, that was kind of the early history of the house. I'm going to ask Didier to kind of go through some of the later finds that we made on the property. And go ahead and do that.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm Didier Delizer. My husband, Paul Greenstein, wasn't able to be here today. I want to express our gratitude to everyone on the commission and on the staff for the enormous amount of work that you've invested in this project, the ongoing research that the staff did just between the time when you visited the home and now really revealed some new and interesting and important details about the house. It's those of you all are scholars of history yourselves, and you know that history is always ongoing, and we're always discovering new things in the past. I happened to I was working at UCLA Special Collections when the Los Angeles Times photo morgue and index card archives, what used to be the way to search the Times when they acquired that in the 80s, the Los Angeles Times was one of the first newspapers to really be digitized. And nevertheless, the fact that four or five of us searched the Times, didn't discover those important details like the name of the restaurant, El Bilderain. That was a piece that we hadn't seen. So I'm deeply grateful to all of you for continuing. It's these ongoing and repeated efforts that really turn up some of this important stuff. There was even a really fascinating article that led us to really think about who the who Arturo and Mabel Bildurain were as people, because a lot of their possessions were itemized after a theft in 1915, including several silk shirts and lots of silk stockings. So they were people who loved to dress well, and their restaurant had them as hosts in their home. The description of the burglary noted that the burglars came in through a broken window that they'd had smashed. They'd cut a screen and smashed a window on the front porch. When Paul bought the house in 2020, there was a screen on the front porch that was original brass, and it had a long slash all the way across it. It had been repaired badly with a needle and thread, and it had been stitched, whip stitched back together, but the gap wasn't closed. It was a gap of about 3/4 of an inch. So like mosquitoes just could come right through. That screen had never been replaced. Unfortunately, we replaced it. It was probably that screen that was torn at the break-in in 1915. So even the most earnest preservationists make mistakes or don't know everything. So just a note on the always ongoing nature of the work that we're all engaged in. And I, again, express my gratitude. It's also the public nature of the work that you do that leads to unusual and interesting interactions with the public community. Because of the public nature of these meetings and the name Bildurain being in that record, we've had the opportunity to get to know a gentleman by the name of Edgar Perez, who's on the phone in the meeting. He's not able to join on Zoom. He's joined by phone. He is the grandnephew of Jesus Bildurain, and he was a second generation cousin to Arturo Bildurain. And I'm aware that I believe he wishes to be recognized when it's time for public comment. It's been tremendous to be able to meet the family, descendants of the people who built the house. These are the joys and some of the reasons why we do this kind of work. And so I wanted to thank you. It's because of all of your involvement in this that we've been able to continue our work and continue to do it even better. So, and if you have any questions, Melissa informed me that you had questions about the sources. And unfortunately, that wasn't relayed to me, so I hadn't been able to provide those for today. I may know them. It's also possible that since Edward Perez is a significant genealogist of his family, he may know them by heart.
Charlie, any?
Nita pretty much summed up a lot of stuff on this. I might add this, for me, this was a fascinating district, both of this particular house. And I used to have a problem with my upstairs. I'm so used to sitting there with a computer and running through everything. We didn't do a new slideshow, but this one is the one we had before, which I can't think of a way of moving it. So we thank you very much for the indulgence. We know the commissioners that came out enjoyed the house, and they especially love Paul's motorcycle collection. So thank you again.
Okay, commissioners, any questions?
Yes, Laura Dominguez for the record. Thank you for providing the information in the addendum. It was, I think it really helped flesh out the story and as well as staff's research as well. So I just want to echo that gratitude. My question was about the sourcing, because I think that's where some of the staff report differs from what's in the, what was in the addendum. And I think some of their analysis sort of hinges on what was not cited in yours. And so I think maybe we can clarify, because I think the question hinges on the ancestry and the lineage, how long Arturo and Mabel, you know, how long their parents were in California, and it's all tied to the California identity. And so I think since the addendum didn't have the evidence cited, I'm wondering if you can kind of clarify that for us.
Yes, I can. So Arturo and Mabel Bildurain were both born in the American period in California. as a U.S. state. So, Arturo's father, Jesus Bildarain, I believe it was his father who came from Spain, from the Basque region of Spain, to Baja California, to Mexico, in the Mexican colonial period. And then he was, I believe, Jesus Bildarain, is that not right? That Jesus Bildarain was born in Mexico, in Baja California, came to Alta California. Mabel's grandmother, I think that was in the addendum, Mabel's grandmother grew up on Rancho Santa Clara and was the only one of the immediate family who did grow up on a rancho and have at least some of that wealth. Her wealth was said to be dissipated by the time of her death, shortly after the construction of the house. But it's possible, as the staff suggested, that they had more wealth than we realized. And it's also possible that they inherited wealth after her grandmother died, that they got maybe not a huge ton of money, a great deal of money, but perhaps they inherited some money filtered down. Perhaps the property was sold. We haven't investigated that part. What's interesting is that people like the Bildarains, Arturo and Mabel Bildarain, were establishing, this is a challenge with a definition of California, which was raised by the staff. And there's a specific definition that you must work with because you need a clear one for the city. But California is also a much more subjective ethnic identity. So for people like Arturo and Mabel Bildarain, they did not see themselves as Mexican, and they did not see themselves as Indian, and they were not considered Anglo-American or white. They really did see themselves as California, as a different group. And descendants of California still recognize themselves as California today, even though by the technical definition, you would have had to been born, long before now. So my answer for you is, in part, I can provide more of the details of when all these people were born. I never remember those dates, but I'm happy to provide that. And I apologize for not knowing that you had asked that. I would have brought it with me. But it's also that there's this extension of the subjective identity. And one reason why the novel Ramona was so important is because it offered to Californios a way to look proudly upon their own past and create a forward-moving identity for themselves in the late 19th and into the 20th century.
Okay. Thank you. I think that helps answer and contextualize. I think it's just more a question of in the future. Mm-hmm. I think it helps staff to have that evidence cited directly so that they know, we can compare the sources.
I'll provide it. Thank you.
Any more questions? All right, let's open public comment. Any hands raised or any speaker cards?
Brian Sanchez, for the record, we have no in-person speaker cards this time.
Any hands raised?
Ari Brisky, for the record, we have no hands raised in Zoom. Ari Brisky, for the record, if you'd like to speak on Zoom, please raise your hand now. If you're joining us by phone, you would hit *6. Okay. Sorry, still no hands raised in Zoom.
Okay, let's close public comment. If a hand appears, let me know. We can reopen public comment. Commissioner Dominguez and I had the opportunity to tour this house. Any thoughts?
Yes, well, the house really comes to life, and I really applaud the work, the really thoughtful research and meticulous work that has gone into this house. I know it's still an ongoing project, but I felt that touring it really helped understand how the Bildarains were sort of straddling these social and cultural worlds between this identity that they are wanting to reclaim for themselves as a way of sort of improving their mobility in at this period of time in LA, but also trying to be fully modern and embrace those technologies. And that really came to life for me in the visit. I have additional comments, but I'll turn.
It was fascinating to tour the house. I mean, the levels of work that you've undertaken and exploration and revealing levels of the history of the house has been fascinating. You do have a lot of work left to do. Maybe if the Mills Act ever comes back, that can be part of your process. But it was just, it's a beautiful house from the street, and it keeps revealing levels of beauty and interest as you walk through it. My thoughts on designation, without that screen, I'm not sure we can do it. But since you saved everything else, including some of the openings in the walls, which had been closed up, where windows used to be, and other levels of exploration and restoration, I think it's a good monument. Other commissioners? Do I have a motion?
If I can just add, I wanted to clarify something in the record from last time, because I know the audio was a little garbled. So it really is not, it doesn't affect anything other than my questions last time were to explore whether or not there was a secondary period of significance for the later Chinese American history, not the 1871 massacre, just because that was such a long period of time that it was occupied by a Buddhist temple. But I think I'll just echo what was shared, in that I know there is a sort of, there is a definition of who the Californios were, and then there is how that identity was reclaimed and interpreted over time. And I think people like the Bildarains were upwardly mobile. They still didn't leave a lot of archival record. And I think that the building itself helps kind of flesh out their lives in ways that maybe we can't find in other ways. I would encourage some flexibility a little bit on the definition of California to encompass them and to flesh out that experience. But I think there's been a lot of work has gone into this. So I want to thank everyone for that.
Do I have a motion?
This is Laura Dominguez. I will move that we recommend the Bildarain residents for designation as a historic cultural monument.
This is Commissioner Rubio. I second the motion.
Brian.
Commissioner Dominguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Rubio?
Yes.
Commissioner Barron?
Yes.
Commissioner Buona?
Yes.
Commissioner President Milovsky?
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Okay, moving on to item number 7, the Talmadge Apartments on Wilshire Boulevard.